Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to the fourth show of Talking Ed Season 2, presented by the students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change Cohort 2. I am Sabrina, your host for the day. So listeners, today on this show, we will be discussing about brain drain and its implications. With us, we have Dania and Irini.
It's a pleasure to be with you again in this new radio program.
Hello, thank you for having us.
On this first section of our program, we will explore the definition of brain drain and its different implications. Besides, we will have a very interesting quantitative view on the amount of students studying overseas from Honduras and Greece.
So let us begin with the definition of brain drain that Frederick Docquerre highlights in his article, The Brain Drain from Developing Countries. And it states that the term brain drain refers to the international transfer of human capital resources, and it applies mainly to the migration of highly educated individuals from developing to developed countries.
Thank you, Rini. Very clear and precise definition. So now I would like to continue with the statistical data for our audience so they get an idea of how many students from Honduras are abroad. Let me give you the Honduran perspective on it. Well, if we go all the way to North America, according to Open Doors 2017, the most popular country to study at is United States. So far, 2,046 Honduran students are studying there. And let me add a very interesting fact about this. Honduras is the Central American country leading with the highest rate of students in the United States, and increasing the rate of students in a 3.1% in these two last years. What does this high quantity mean? To what extent is this positive or negative? Moving now to Europe, the global flow of tertiary-level students by UNESCO states that preferred European country to study is Spain, with 326 Honduran students in 2016. We also have records of students in Asia. In Japan, for example, we have 11 students in 2015. We can see that Honduran students abroad have been very active in these last 3 years. What about Greek situation, Irini?
Well, the situation is pretty similar in Greece. The data I have with me today were presented by Lois Lambrianidis of the Economics Department of the University of Macedonia in Thessaloniki. He attributed the emigration of graduates to better job opportunities and pay abroad. Another source I have is the American Hellenic Chamber of Commerce, which stated that almost 500,000 Greeks left the country in the years of 2008 to 2016, depriving Greece of brain power while at the same time contributing to the aging of the population. Greece is a country aging very rapidly, while the biggest problem it faces imminently is the brain drain, that approximately, as I said, 500,000 natives left Greece during a 10-year period. One of the most interesting findings of the study was that 61% of respondents did not even look for work in Greece before deciding to leave. The graduates working abroad are most likely to have degrees in economics, business administration, law, computer programming, or engineering. The responses for the survey were taken from graduates living in 47 countries in total, and 91% of them were concentrated in 10 countries only, mainly the UK, the USA, and Germany.
This piece of information that you have shared reveals very important aspects regarding brain drain. One of them is the massive quantity of Greeks leaving their country only in a span of 7 years. Also, something that caught my attention is the tendency of studying in the science and technological areas, leaving aside the humanistic area. Considering this, what are the most important advantages that make you stay in a foreign country, Irini?
Well, this is a great question, Dania. I have been living in the UK for 3 years now, and I could mention many things, like the better salary, more opportunities for progression, the opportunity to grow as a professional in a multifaceted way, and obviously the unique chance to network and meet people from another culture. But for me personally, the biggest advantage living abroad is the independence I have. What I mean is that I can play an active role in my future and in my life choices. I make decisions based on my goals, and most importantly, I am not trapped in a reality that dictates to me how I should do things. Namely, in Greece, I felt like my future and my career were predetermined, and I was conditioned to think that the situation cannot change. Moving abroad changed my life, empowered me, and transformed me as a person.
Well, that's very interesting indeed, Irini, and I really feel identified with it. And actually, we're going to get in depth about what Irini just said from her perspective in Greece. Actually, we have interviewed one Honduran professor who is currently studying in the USA. We will have her insights from a short interview.
Oh, that is amazing. Let's hear it.
Hello, my name is Yolani Lagos. I am 33 years old. I am from Tegucigalpa, Honduras. My mother, brother, and nephew are all in Honduras, and I am in the United States, currently in Mobile, Alabama. So I am a PhD student in the Instructional Design and Development Program at the University of South Alabama in Mobile, Alabama. I have a bachelor's degree in English teaching from Universidad Pedagógica Nacional Francisco Morazan in Tegucigalpa. I have a master's degree in curriculum and instruction with a minor in learning design systems from Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. I finished my master's degree program in 2016. And as I mentioned, I am currently doing a PhD program. I have experience teaching in Honduras middle and high school in a private school there. I did that prior to finishing my bachelor's degree. Also, I have taught in a college level at Universidad Pedagógica in the north of our country, in La Ceiba. I taught last year there after completing my master's, different courses in the English program in La Ceiba.
Now, Professor Yolani is going to mention the advantages of brain drain from her perspective.
So when we talk about brain drain and some of the advantages and disadvantages of this phenomenon, from my perspective, I would say that, you know, that some advantages are that educated individual, for me, it's very different, you know, navigating through the world. We also, personally, you know, I have the chance to get a better salary than if I was in Honduras. Also, if we think about our countries, you know, it's an advantage that, you know, we are here, we are getting paid in a different currency, therefore, you know, even if it's a small amount of money, I can send back to Honduras to help my family. So that's getting into the economy of Honduras. Also, some of the people that I know, and, you know, including myself, we have personal projects in our communities, you know, helping the library, the school library, or helping a student or helping someone from the community, either a small amount of money or sending them books or, you know, small projects that we can do in our communities. So that is a way of us being abroad and helping.
After mentioning some basic advantages, she proceeds to highlight some disadvantages as well.
Disadvantages, well, of course, we are leaving our country and not necessarily this is a smart move, if we, you know, would like to say that. But, you know, we're leaving our country and we are not directly providing our knowledge to our country and people there. You know, we are affecting our country indirectly. So you know, we are not there, we are not able to suggest changes. Obviously, you know, this is a social impact. You have people who are educated, leaving the country and the society. You know, people are leaving the country. So, you know, you can see there the effects of brain drain. You have people leaving the country because they're not getting paid what they should. You know, there are fewer opportunities because sometimes the opportunities are concentrated not in terms of your qualifications as an individual, but as your connections or networking with other people. So you have, for example, people in very high positions who do not have academic qualifications but have friends. And that is a bit frustrating. You know, I experienced a little bit of that when I went back to Honduras, because even though I had a master's degree and I was teaching in a college level, I was not getting the classes that I, you know, I would have liked. Advanced classes I was getting, you know, like very, very general English classes. So that was a little bit frustrating because honestly, I wanted to, you know, implement my knowledge in more advanced classes within the English program. You know, for example, a general English class is offered to any student on campus. So that was a little bit frustrating. So that frustration, you know, makes you say, well, am I going to stay here? Am I going to further my education? Am I going just to go and see what other opportunities I have outside? You know, am I better valued? Am I going to be used better as a resource at the institution or, you know, corporation where I work? That's why, you know, there are many people just deciding to leave. Well, I hope this helps, and thank you.
After listening to Professor Giolani's perspective on brain drain and its implications, it is necessary to highlight relevant points of it. For example, nepotism is a situation that we consider only applies to us. However, we can see that this can happen to all of us in different contexts, as Professor Giolani just shared with us. Welcome back to Talking Eds, the radio program offered to you by the students of the IMAS Master's Program. Moving forward, we have another very important opinion from one of our Maltese professors from the University of Malta.
So, it is our pleasure to have with us Professor Peter Mayo, who is a speaker, editor, writer, and a member of the Department of Arts, Open Communities and Adult Education at the University of Malta. He is serving as visiting professor at the Institute of Education, University College of London, and is part of the consortium of the IMASC Master Program in Adult Education for Social Change. So, Professor Mayo is going to talk about his own experience moving abroad and continuing his studies, but also he will tell us about his return to Malta and the situation he faced. Hello and welcome, Professor Mayo.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure, as always, to meet you.
Thank you. So can you give us a brief background of your life abroad? We know that you did your PhD in Toronto. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, like most people here, okay, now we have a lot of PhDs being offered locally, but in my generation, most of us used to go abroad to study. And one of the interesting things is we have people here at this university who have been to various places in Europe, many other places, I mean, United States, Australia, New Zealand, you name it, Germany, for example, Spain. I, by, you know, just a matter of chance, ended up in a place I fell in love with, which is Canada. So I went there and with my wife and two kids. One of them was hardly 1 year old. And it turned out to be the best experience, life experience, you know, the best experience of my life. It was a year and a half. I never came back during that year and a half. It was straight. I was there all the time. And it was my first experience because Malta was very different in the early 80s, no, mid 80s to what it is now. And what was interesting, for the first time in my life, I had open exposure to multiculturalism.
Okay, Professor May, thank you for giving us a bit of your background or your experience being abroad, but we have some more questions for you.
Thank you.
So you moved back to Malta after spending time abroad.
Yeah.
What were the reasons behind that decision?
Well, I had no choice. First of all, I'm married to a person who will not leave this country, and so that's one thing. Secondly, it was always the plan to come back. As I said, I was a Commonwealth scholar. Mm-hmm. At the end of a scholarship, you have to go back to your country.
Okay.
Otherwise, it will be a breach of the contract, and you'll get a fine.
Yes.
Not only that, but you have to serve the government. You have to serve the country itself. So I came back, and but it was not like a decision to make. It was expected that I come back. And it's interesting, because what happens there, when you spend a year and a half with no connection except letters from family and telephone calls to the country, and you come back, you begin to see your country in a different light. Now, people have written about this, they've written about exile, they've written about migration, and some people, like Paulo Freire, who you've been studying, refer to this as one example of praxis, because you get, praxis is not practice, as you know, but it is action upon, reflection upon action. Now, what happens is, you've left your place of action, which is Malta. What was my action? I was a school teacher at the time. And you gain some critical distance from it, living abroad. I'm sure many people studied abroad went through this. And then you come back and you see it in a very, very different light, because you have obtained some critical distance from it. And going back, of course, I began to see Malta differently. But I had a job to do. The Director General of Education, Frederick Fearn, at the time, called me over as a returned Commonwealth scholar and asked me what contribution I can give to the department. And there was a very fruitful meeting, because he wanted me to work in adult education. He would have loved, and I loved it. I didn't study adult education, I studied sociology of education. But with quite a dose of sociology from the sociology department. But the focus of my interest, research, etc., was adult education. I took one course on adult education, but the rest were all sociology. But my focus was always adult. I don't know what pushed me in that direction, but I was more fascinated by non-formal routes to education than the formal one. Well, I came back to Malta. I was entrusted with the task of trying to promote adult education. I was alone in the education division. They would not allow somebody to come and join me, people who were interested. I started teaching part-time over here, sociology of education. And one of the courses I taught was sociology of adult education. So I worked for 3 years. It was a very different setup to what we have today. Now, I mean, lifelong learning and adult education has come a long way in Malta.
So what was the most difficult thing you faced moving abroad?
The most difficult part for me was the estrangement, being away from the family. So the emotional, more than the academic work.
That's really interesting indeed. And thank you for your insights. So what would you advise the young people that want to leave their country and move abroad?
Well, let me put it this way. If all things fall into place, people have different reasons to resist going abroad, and one has to respect that. I mean, it's not easy. I mean, I wouldn't go through my experience in Toronto again in terms of the separation, the temporary, thank God, separation from the family.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't, you know, that was stressful. That was stressful. But any young people like yourselves, I mean, I encouraged my daughter to go abroad, even though I felt the pain.
Yes, yes.
So, but you did it, why shouldn't she do it? You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, it's a great learning experience. It's the kind of experience you're not going to get from books just by studying. Of course, every person has her or his own baggage to take care of. You know, I mean, but this is the greatest, you know, it's one of the greatest experiences you can have educationally. Mm-hmm. You don't just learn from the institution and from the books, but you learn from your friends, you learn from the society itself. And that was big. And I learned a lot from the students.
Yes.
I mean, the students who had, you know, both in Edmonton and Toronto, like yourselves, were excellent. So they were my teachers. And I hope I may have taught one or two of them, you know, through exchanges. But they were my, you know, some of my greatest teachers were you know, were the students and my neighbors.
So our last question for you is, can you give us one word to describe your entire experience abroad?
So, you know, that's invaluable. That's the adjective I was looking, that was what I was looking for. It's invaluable. And this complements what you read in books, often goes beyond what you read in books.
Yeah, definitely. I agree, and wow, I really feel identified with Professor Mayo on his enriching experience.
Actually,
abroad.
You can call me Peter, as you do in classroom.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. This is graduate studies. You're graduate students.
Yeah. And, well, thank you so much for your valuable insight and advice, Peter. We really appreciate it. It was a true honor to have you with us today.
Oh, my God.
Thank
well,
you.
The honor is mine. The pleasure is mine. The honor is mine. And I really enjoy conversing with you inside the classroom. You're a wonderful group. I'm not saying it because you're present. And, you know, so was the previous group. I mean, I think this course is something really, really exciting.
Brilliant.
International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change.
For social
yes.
change, yes.
Right.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Peter. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Talking Eds. We have been discussing about brain drain, and before the break, we had some valuable input from Professor Peter Mayo, an 100 professor that is currently in the USA. Moving forward with this program, we will talk about initiatives in Greece and Honduras to mitigate brain drain and its effects. Irini, do you want to start, please?
Yes, surely, Dania. Thank you so much. Since 2010, more than 130,000 university graduates have left Greece to look for work, making up approximately 75% of the total immigrant population. But 53.4% of Greeks who belong to the brain drain generation would return within 2 years if deep structural changes in the Greek establishment were enforced, according to a report from a Greek group called Brain Gain. So the Brain Gain movement is working to change that reality. The group, which now has more than 100 members, was officially launched in June 2016 after an initial meeting of 7 Greek researchers and academics, including scientists, as well as legal scholars, economists, and strategic communication specialists. The group has started developing a set of best practices for the Greek government and research institutions. The overall idea, according to co-founder Foukion Sinis, a pharmacist and health economist, who is currently the head of commercial affairs and strategy for Middle Africa at Novo Nordisk at the United Arab Emirates, is that they will describe examples of how countries known for the higher rates of meritocracy and lower rates of corruption, deal with thorny problems such as wasteful spending and lack of transparency in hiring practices at universities and research institutes, and of course the public sector. Currently, individual Brain Gain members can post brief proposals that describe ways to tackle a problem in their field of expertise. The rest of the members assess the proposals for scientific soundness. Once all of the proposals have been submitted and reviewed, the members will vote for the best practices in each field. The group then plans to present the final document to the Greek Parliament.
This is a very interesting way to face the brain drain situation in Greece, Irini. Do you think that their practices can be adopted by other countries as well?
Yes, of course. I mean, although brain gain is focused on Greece, many of the challenges the group is addressing are relevant elsewhere as well. In particular, lack of funding and uncertainty and instability in academic careers are also problems in the United States and the European Union, according to one member of the brain gain movement. Given how widespread many of these problems are, watching the brain gain initiative unfold could be instructive for research from other countries. Do you have a similar initiative in Honduras, Dania?
Yes, we do, Irini. Even though the initiatives are not explicit about facing or avoiding brain drain, in the last 10 years, there have been different foundations of alumni associations that have undertaken community development initiatives in different areas, like health, language teaching, technology, among others. Examples of them are ABEJA. This is the Association of Japanese Alumni from Honduras. Mostly, they dedicate to teach Japanese courses at the National University of Honduras. USA Alumni Association is another group that focuses on different types of projects, these ones being granted by the United States Department of State. This is indeed something that has helped to avoid brain drain and benefit the Honduran communities directly.
Thank you, Dania and Irini, for sharing and discussing your personal experience and thoughts with regards to brain drain and the current situation. I would also like to thank Professor Peter Mayo for honoring us with his presence and giving us valuable insights, and Professor Yolani for making time to speak with us. That's all, dear listeners. We have reached the end of our show. Goodbye and grazie Hafna for listening to us.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you and goodbye.